708 at Talk 107.3 FM, WBRP. Good morning, everybody. Brian Haldane here with you. Taylor Sharp producing. We got one more hour to go here, and as a guest-heavy hour, as Stephanie Hilferty will join us at 7:17, and Congressman Garrett Graves will join us at 7:35. You heard that last story from CBS? The unknown mystery causing the death of all the dolphins in the Gulf? And they're, like, right off the bat, they're like, Deepwater Horizon. Something that happened 8 years ago is what's killing the dolphins. Not the fresh water that's being dumped in from the Bonnecarry spillway. No. There's no, like, clear enemy. No clear bad guy that way. That was lazy. Lazy, I tell you. Do better, news partners. 7:09 at Talk 107.3 FM. Let's start this hour off with Top Stories and Trending.
Now, Top Stories and Trending. Keeping you informed on the stories people will be talking about today. Number 5.
So we had the story for you yesterday when we talked with Rodney Mallett from the Department of Transportation. There will be intermittent closures on the Sunshine Bridge later this week. According to DOTD, the closures will be between 8 p.m. and 12 a.m. Thursday night. Only one direction of traffic will be closed at a time, so you still will be able to get through. Traffic shouldn't be bad enough at that time for it to cause any major problems.
Number 4.
One person died in a single vehicle accident Tuesday evening on Chippewa Street. The crash was reported sometime around 6 p.m. on Chippewa at I-110. BRPD says the driver suffered a medical condition prior to the accident. We're expecting more information on this to come out either today or in the near future.
Number 3.
Deputies have arrested a second suspect involved in a May shooting. The shooting happened on May 21st. EBR Sheriff's Office was called to an apartment complex on Corsi Boulevard in reference to the shooting. Before being taken to the hospital, the 41-year-old victim said he'd been shot during an armed robbery that happened in the parking lot. The armed robbery happened during part of a drug transaction that escalated. Darius Brooks was identified, as was Javon Williams, as suspects. Brooks was arrested Monday. According to the arrest report, Williams and Brooks, they were the ones that laid out the details of the drug transaction.
Number 2.
Former LSU quarterback Rohan Davey says it's his family that was referenced as individuals A and B in court documents first reported by WBRZ related to the federal investigation into John Paul Funes. The Business Report published an account from Davey late Tuesday. Davey told the Baton Rouge outlet that it was his mother and sister that were referenced in the federal court documents. Funes is charged with embezzling more than $500,000 from Our Lady of the Lake Foundation. He is expected to plead guilty later this week.
Number 1.
The numbers are in, and more than 200 buildings flooded in East Baton Rouge after recent severe weather. Talk about the storm from two Thursdays ago. Officials say more than 500 damage reports were submitted following severe weather. The deadline to submit reports was Monday. Records show 204 buildings flooded, 134 vehicles received water, 110 structures were damaged. The vast majority of the flooded buildings were residential. That's a look at your top stories presented by DaleBuysHousesNow.com. Check out DaleBuysHousesNow.com if you've got a house you just need to unload. Like, if you've got a house that you were going to go the whole HGTV route, want to live out your Chip and Joanna fantasy, check out DaleBuysHousesNow.com because it's a lot harder than you thought it was. It's a full-time job. They have a whole TV show to do it. You just have some spare time on the weekends. Completely different. Or if you have a property you inherited that you never wanted in the first place, check out DaleBuysHousesNow.com. Or, and this is a big one here, if you own an apartment complex and you are just sick of the landlord life, you're ready to move on, you're done with chasing people down for rent, check out DaleBuysHousesNow.com. Fill out a quick little survey. They will contact you. They take it from there. The process is remarkably simple, and they can help you out. Or you give them a call at 291-8000. 291-8000 for DaleBuysHousesNow.com. Here's a look at what's trending this morning. The headline here was just too good to pass up. Officials promise a new adult video store isn't real. Parish officials are reassuring Iberville residents that a Lions Club building hasn't actually been replaced by an adult video store. A post on the Parish Council's official Facebook page Tuesday aimed to quell questions and concerns after a sign reading adult video appeared on the social club's facade. The explanation? It's all for a film shoot. And while there's no word on what movie it might be, the parish said the building along Highway 77 is being rented out to Celtic Studios. The parish council reiterated no permits have been issued for a real adult video store in the area. I would just love to have been one of the people driving up and down Highway 77 for either the outrage or the false hope. Like, I'm not here to judge, but if you drove past and you're like, adult video store,
I know what I'm doing this Friday night.
And the disappointment to walk in and like, what? It's a Lions Club.
Okay, so the sign just said adult video.
Right.
Seems legit to me.
Yeah, that's all it's adult video.
Yeah.
That's all it's saying.
That seems legit.
Here's the thing, though. Like, I understand Hollywood has to create something that wasn't real to begin with, but can we not go to a real adult video store?
There's plenty.
To film the adult video store? Like, I want the authenticity of, like, the adult video store. I mean, was there not a place on Airline Highway that wasn't available for this particular scene? And what director walked into a Lions Club and said, this should have a bunch of sex toys in it? Stephanie, oh, jeez, I'm going to have to find a way to segue this one. Hey, we're going to stop talking about this and start talking about the legislative session in just a minute with State Representative Stephanie Hilferty. .717 at Talk 107.3 FM, WBRP, Brian Haldane here with you. So yesterday, Governor John Bel Edwards signed the $30 billion budget that lawmakers approved in the recently completed legislative session. Governor John Bel Edwards was touting the raise for teachers, but also in that budget was some new dollars for early childhood education. One of the more vocal members of the legislature who were in favor of that, pushing for that, was State Representative Stephanie Hilferty, who joins us now. Good morning, Stephanie. How are you?
Good morning, Brian. Thank you for having me on.
I am happy to have you on because a lot of the work you did is stuff that we need to be talking about on a regular basis. Because I don't like to just talk about what goes on at the Capitol. I like to talk about how it actually trickles down to our actual lives. And early childhood education is one of those. And this was your baby from the start, if you'll pardon the pun.
Yes. I like it. Yes, this has been something very important to me since I started in the legislature in 2016. There was a small group of us working towards early education funding back then, and that group has grown every year. And now we had a large vocal majority advocating for early education dollars in this past year's budget. What we're talking about when we talk about early education is that period between 0 and 4 years old. This is before the child enters our K-12 system.
Right.
I believe that in advancing our success in K-12 and getting our children ready for the workforce, that time period between 0 to 4 is critical. Why is it critical? Between 0 and 3 years old, 85% of a child's brain development occurs. So that is a crucial time period, and anyone with young children or grandchildren will certainly attest to that, how quickly they pick up things, how quickly they make connections. And that's a time period right now where, as a state, we make very little investment. The budget that was signed yesterday will help change that, in that we're putting $20 million towards early education. And the main program that will benefit from that is a program called the Child Care Assistance Program, which requires a mother or father to be working in job training or in school to apply for that program.
Okay, so $20 million, and we're going to dive into that CCAP program in just a second. But $20 million, is that enough or is this just a good start?
It's a good start. It's to educate our youngest learners is, first of all, you have to have very low student-teacher ratios for the 0, 1, and 2-year-olds. And, you know, look, anyone that's watched children that age will easily understand why that is. That's for the protection of those children.
Oh, absolutely. It's like 7 or 8 to 1.
Yeah. Right. And so because of that, that increases the cost, right? You can't have a larger class. It's not like a class size that you can have in third grade of 20 to 25 students. Those are much smaller classrooms, as well as childcare goes year-round. To accommodate the fact that parents are working. So those two factors, caring for those children is comparable, if not slightly more, than what we pay for the minimum foundation program in K-12.
Okay. Well, and it's good to have a starting point.
Yeah.
So
it is good. And we had a study done that it would require about $80 million annually to onload these children so that we could kind of ramp up to serve more children. And we currently have a wait list. I think it's about 3,500 children that are on that wait list for the CCAP program.
And naturally, we're kind of behind the rest of the country when it comes to early childhood education. I should say kind of. We are behind the rest of the country when it comes to early childhood education. And the argument has always been, what are you actually teaching kids? And it's not like there's a curriculum. It's not like they're learning math. It's not like they're memorizing who the presidents were. This is about brain development and social development, and it is custom fit for kids this age.
It is. They are learning. A lot of what's taught in those early years is social development, which is probably one of the most important skills that you can have, especially if you think of your workforce and what employers are looking for out there. They need somebody that is going to be able to interact well with customers and be respectful and be responsible, right? Some of those key things that are very hard to teach when you've got a 20-year-old sitting in front of you looking for a job.
Right.
They're 2 years old and you're teaching them how to interact and work through all of those, we call them play things, where it's playing out scenes and whatnot, but that's crucial, as well as that's when they start learning how to read and sound out letters and do very basic arithmetic. And again, 85% of your brain development is occurring during that 0 to 3 year old period.
State Representative Stephanie Hilferty is our guest. Stephanie, I told you we're going to talk about that CCAP program in just a second, so let's do that right now. Who is eligible for this and who, I don't want to say who is not, but who is to be the primary beneficiary of this program?
So to be eligible for CCAP, that person, the parent, must be a certain percentage below the federal poverty line, but they also must be enrolled in workforce training, school, or actively working in a job. So this is not somebody that is sitting at home while their child is in daycare. That is not allowed under this program. So this is really, when I was talking to these folks at the community and technical college system, which is certainly something we want to encourage, is people getting their certificates, getting their associate's degree so they can get into the workforce. I said, what's the biggest challenge to somebody entering or completing one of your programs? And one of the handful of things they said was early education. They said, these people need reliable child care. And so as a state, we started looking at this as a twofold issue. One, we want to educate our youngest learners to make sure that they're successful as they matriculate and as they enter our workforce and become, the next generation of Louisianians. But two, this is also a current workforce issue. So today, we've got parents that if you don't have reliable child care, you're either going to have to miss work, you might turn down a promotion, you might turn down extra hours. And there's actually a study showing what that loss is to the state of parents holding back out of the workforce because of lack of reliable child care.
But that's the part of the argument where you start to lose some conservatives that say it's not my tax. My tax dollars shouldn't pay for your child care. I think the public education part is probably the bigger part in developing a workforce to say we're no longer going to be behind other states when it comes to that. But either way, we're off and running. I mean, this horse has left the barn and only moving forward from here.
And really, this is the thing. I mean, we have, as a state, our K through 12, we have substantial improvements that need to be made. And think about it this way, Brian. If you've got, you enter the school system at 5 in kindergarten, right?
Right.
If you've got somebody entering in as a 5-year-old, but they're at a 2 or 3-year-old level, so they're 2 to 3 years behind, that child, it's going to be very hard for that child to catch up.
Absolutely.
What are the odds of that child making up 2 years in that first year? A teacher's job, and we give our teachers a lot of jobs in the classroom, but their job is to advance that child one grade level per year. So if they're already coming in behind, the likelihood that they stay behind, that they're not proficient in reading and mathematics when they enter fourth grade and eighth grade is much higher. And then, that child might become disenfranchised from school. And then we've lost that child, but we're still paying for that child from K through 12. So I think it's really advantageous for us as a state to look at those early years as a fertile time
Yes.
To educate our youth so that they start on grade level.
Yeah. And, well, you know, the only part where I disagree with you on that is you say we pay for that child K through 12. I would say if we're not paying for them on the front end, we're paying for them for the rest of their lives because they're not going to be working at a place where they can have a livable wage. They're not going to be earning a living that doesn't include some sort of public assistance beyond that. And that's not me saying that. That's the numbers saying that. So Stephanie Hilford is our guest. I want to shift gears and talk about I got two more things I want to talk about, but I have a feeling we're going to run out of time here. Something that you've worked on in the past that I know you want to work on again in the future. And as a fiscal conservative, this is a big one for me. And it's basically walking through the budget, walking through every appropriation, trying to find out what we still need. Talk to me a little bit about what you've done in the past with that and when you're going to bring it back.
So, great question. In 2017, I had a bill that requires a review of statutory dedications, all statutory dedications in our state budget. And the way it was set up, and this was passed, so it is now law, is that over a four-year period, all 400 of our state statutory dedications must be reviewed by a committee that has both House and Senate members, which then is presented. They will present legislation every year to the legislature. We've had these bills the past few years to eliminate some of those statutory dedications. This is crucial. So statutory dedications are a pot of money that moves through the budget process. These are streams of money that have been dedicated in the past by legislative acts, but don't receive the same oversight that we see on other parts of the budget. You know, I'm sure a lot of your listeners have watched as Department of Health, Department of Education, some of those other groups go through the appropriations process. These statutory dedications, because they were set in statute, don't receive that same sort of oversight prior to this bill that I created. So now this group goes through each one of those statutory dedications, and we get a one-pager on it, which gives a lot of information. It tells us when was this created, what was the purpose of the original purpose of the creation, how much money goes into it, where that money comes from. Mm-hmm. It gives us any notes on whether this was as a result of a court settlement or something like that, where there's something legally obligating us to hold this money in this account. It also shows the burn rate for that. So, do they have $1 million in that account and they spend $10,000 a year and they, get $100,000 every year. So they've got a good cushion there, right?
Right.
They maybe don't need all of that money. So it gives us a lot of information. And then that department that receives the fund comes in and sits at the table with the treasurer's office to provide, assistance as far as explaining where the money is going to and coming from, and the committee can ask questions of that department. And sometimes these departments, they hadn't looked at the fund in a while. Sometimes there was uncertainty as to the uses of the fund and so on. So this has been a very good exercise.
Give me an example of where it's been applied. And we've got a little bit over a minute left. Give me one example where it's actually been applied.
Yeah, so look, we have some of these funds that are – we have some that are fees that are classified as funds, and I think those should be reclassified as fees, and that's something that we've been doing.
Mm-hmm.
We had a couple of the smaller ones that we did move through and get rid of. We had some where we saw that the actual purpose of the fund was not where the department was actually using the money, and sometimes the department was using the money for – uses that we think are good as this, I think should happen as a state, but had nothing to do with the actual fund. And so we worked through that whole process with these departments, and we continue to do so. So this is something, this doesn't end last year or this year or next year. This is going to be an ongoing process for the legislature, and it's really crucial. I mean, if you're going to have these statutory dedications, which I know that has been a big point of contention as to whether these should even exist.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to have them, you need to review them.
Absolutely. Stephanie Hilford, we are just straight up out of time this morning. I know we had plenty more to cover. We're going to have to pick it up again real soon, though, okay?
Thanks, Brian.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Yep, absolutely. Anytime. 7:31, coming up on 7:31 at Talk 107.3 FM. Stephanie was very vocal in the minimum marriage age as well. I'm going to have to dive back into that at some point because that whole thing was like the state was taking crazy pills. Time for CBS News, then we've got Congressman Garrett Graves next. 7:38 at Talk 107.3 FM, WBRP. Brian Haldane here with you. Governor John Bel Edwards signed the budget yesterday, $30 billion raises going to teachers. We're going to talk about that in our next segment. But right now, we are joined by Congressman Garrett Graves. He meets up with us every Wednesday for a little update. Congressman Graves, how are you, man?
Hey, I'm doing fantastic. How about you, Brian?
Could not be better. Could not be better. Got a lot moving. Got a lot going on with your office. So I want to dive right in and start off with the big news about the duplication of benefits loophole being closed.
Yeah. So it's very busy right now. A lot going on. But duplication of benefits is, you know, it's kind of a mixed bag here. Now, on the one hand, we finally have guidance out there laying out a process by which many of the thousands and thousands of families that have been adversely affected by the duplication of benefits issue. They took a loan out, were later told they couldn't get a grant because they got a loan. No one thinks a loan and a grant are duplicative except for the federal government. So again, good news is that we've laid out a path forward from HUD from the federal agency that allows thousands of these folks to get paid. The problem is that they introduce new criteria in here, basically some income thresholds, and trying to box out a significant portion of these duplication of benefits victims from ever getting their money. I think it's unlawful in what they've done. It's not consistent with the bill that I wrote that we passed. They certainly are trying to make this more bureaucratic and more hurdles. So we're continuing to work with them. But look, you know, good news. Three things real quick. Number one, they allowed for interest payments to be covered. Number two, they allowed for those that are below a financial threshold, an income threshold, to be able to get their duplication of benefits payment. Number three, they finally laid out sort of a path forward of the steps that need to be taken in order for us to get there, which we've been waiting 8 months for that, and we're approaching 3 years from the actual flood. So a few good things in there, but they have screwed up, in my opinion, the guidance. So we're continuing to work with them on that to get it perfected.
That income threshold was exactly where I was going right from jump. So I do want to expound on that. I want you to expound on that a little bit.
Sure.
You said you're continuing the fight to get rid of that. How big of a fight is this going to be, and how much longer is it going to take? Because we're already 3 years removed from the flood.
Oh, look, let me be clear. I mean, there's no excuse for how long these folks are taking to get this stuff done. And this is, I mean, I couldn't even imagine being one of these people holding the bag on all this ridiculousness. But the deal is, in terms of income threshold, what they've done is they basically have come in and created new criteria that, for example, may require folks, like a family of three, that are earning, I think when we did the calculations, over $80,000 a year, that they may be excluded from being able to get an additional payment from the Restore Louisiana program. It's unfair because they're introducing new criteria and finding new ways to effectively block these folks from getting paid. But again, you know, they did clarify things like the people who didn't actually accept the loan and things like that. So it's kind of a mixed bag in some of the things they fixed and some of the things they messed up.
Congressman Garrett Graves is our guest. Got a couple of other things I want to touch on, but while our time is short, not the least of which is, a couple days ago, you had a meeting with Mayor Sharon Weston Broome about, and we're going to be flood heavy today, a meeting with Sharon Weston Broome about the flood protection in Baton Rouge specifically. There's a ton of money coming to town. What came from that meeting to make sure we're maximizing that money?
Yeah, we had a really, really good meeting. And look, there's a lot of confusion out there. We kind of went the shotgun approach where we looked for every funding stream we could, thinking we'd get one or two of them. We ended up getting all five of the five we sought. And so now we have $3 billion through five different programs that all have different sets of rules, requirements, cost shares, and things like that. And so I think that, you know, say it again, I think there's a lot of confusion out there for what's going on. The good news is that we're going to have the best flood protection we've ever had. One of the components of the $3 billion in funding we secured is $255 million for flood control in the Baton Rouge area. And it's Beaver Bayou, Blackwater Bayou, the north part of the parish. It's Jones Creek, Ward Creek, and Bayou Fountain. in the southern part of the parish. There is a cost share required, and you have to put your, it's total of $65 million. A large portion of that can be paid over 30 years, but there is sort of a down payment that's required for the real estate. You have to buy the real estate that's needed for the project on the front end, so sometime over the next probably 2 to 3 years. And so on the other large projects, there's a project in the River Parishes, there's a project called Comeet Project that most folks are aware of. The state has come in and provided a significant portion of the cost share for those. But we also saved the state tens of millions of dollars on the Comeet Project for how we got the funding for that one. Most of it's 100% federal cost, eliminating the need for the state to put up a big chunk of money. So what we did is we said, hey, look, let's move these savings from Comeet over to the Baton Rouge Project from the state. The city can put up a little bit of money, and we can pay this over, you know, 30, probably 34 years. So we should be able to work it out. And I think that the mayor and I had a really good conversation, both committed to trying to figure out where to find these funds. We're going to be meeting with the governor sometime in the next couple of weeks to talk to him about it as well. But bottom line, Brian, is that this is $250 million. We cannot leave it on the table. We've got vultures out there circling. This is one of the last projects to be locked in through an agreement signed between the Corps, the state, the city, and we have got to get this thing moving.
Did I hear right in that answer that it's going to be you were projecting roughly 3 years before we start to see some real life application to flood relief?
Well, there will be some shorter term progress. I think, for example, there are even efforts where we're having discussions, preliminary discussions about maybe even looking at moving out or separating the Beaver and Blackwater Bayou sections that may be ready to go a little bit sooner up in the central area. So we could see progress even before then. The 3 years is probably when the last parcel of real estate will be needed.
Okay.
And so, but it doesn't mean that that will be when we first start seeing progress. We could see progress. If we can get this agreement locked down, we could see progress probably within about the next 12 to 18 months.
Well, that's a much better outlook than what I thought I was hearing.
It really is. And look, this is a big deal. I mean, just the rain we had a couple of weeks ago, of course, the August flood, and it's important to keep in mind, look, you can't get places, it's not safe, but also, you know, your home, I mean, that's where the majority of your money is invested, it's where your family tries to stay safe. We've got to protect these assets, our homes, our businesses, and we can do better than we're doing now, and this money is going to certainly take us several steps forward. I'm really excited about these projects.
Congressman Garrett Graves is our guest. I want to shift from flood protection to infrastructure for a minute because I was reading on your Facebook page yesterday about addressing the region's traffic crisis. I want to know a little bit more about what's going on there.
Well, so we are trying to negotiate a new transportation bill, a new highway bill. We did one in December of 2015, the first year that I was here. We made substantial progress for Louisiana and just, you know, helping connect the dots. That's why we're seeing the work on I-10 right now between Highland Road and Dutchtown Prairieville exit. That's why we're making progress right now on the PQ exit. That's why the Washington Street exit configuration is all being changed and improved. So a lot of progress in that one, but now we're working on a new bill trying to get additional funds to the state to where we can work on things like a new bridge crossing the river. The problem we're at right now, we're sort of in a stalemate in that no one wants to talk funding streams. Both the president and Nancy Pelosi, Speaker Pelosi, have kind of both just said, you know, I'm not going first, or I don't want to talk about this at this point. And they've got a lot of, I think, personality and policy differences. So we're continuing to work on some of the policy side, but really having a tough time figuring out how we change the financing stream. Right now, there's a gas tax that all of us pay at the pump. That goes to Washington. For every $1 we send from the pumps in Louisiana, we're getting $1.31 back. And we're just trying to work on updating the financing stream to make sure that we can continue making robust investments in some of our transportation projects in Louisiana and across the country. And that's sort of the stalemate at this point.
Congressman Garrett Graves is our guest. What else are you working on right now?
Well, I'll tell you, we got two or three of the big things. Last night, we did an amendment, a big argument on the House floor about the Corps of Engineers. We're trying to move them out of the Department of Defense or find a better way of getting these Corps projects out the door. We've got people fighting us, which is just fascinating because I believe anybody who fights us on this doesn't understand how the Corps works or doesn't. Number two, we've got a hearing this morning that we're leading on the 737 MAX, the Boeing crash. We have Sully Thunberg, the pilot who landed the plane in the Hudson, coming along with many others to talk about a better path forward for aviation safety. And then we've got about 80 to 100 amendments that we have written, our office has written, on four bills that are going through the House Resources Committee, unfortunately, at the same time as our aviation hearing, so we're going to be running back and forth, where they're trying to take some of our offshore energy money and put it, give it to California, Nevada, Idaho, all these other states where they're trying to buy federal land for national parks and do maintenance on those lands, saying it's important for conservation. And I'm saying, wait a minute, we need conservation right in Louisiana where this money is coming from. You're not going to rob all of our money and send it to other states and ignore the conservation problem with the coast in Louisiana, the flooding and hurricane vulnerability. So we're going to make this a really difficult markup for them. We're going to point out all the policy problems with what they're trying to do. But in this case, you had the chairman of the committee, the Democrats in this case, refused to talk to us, negotiate with us, and are just trying to shove this bill through. So we're going to make it a little difficult for them and show them the policy problems with what they're doing and why robbing Louisiana like this is not a good idea for the overall environment or conservation efforts.
Did you say 80 to 100 amendments
over
four?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did.
Fun.
You know, and Brian, we could have gone even higher, but the deal is that this is how many policy problems there are with their bills. They haven't thought this through. It's penny wise, pound foolish.
Right.
And you can't go out there and tout all these environmental groups. Oh, we're doing this for the environment. Whenever one of the biggest environmental crises that's existential in Louisiana is what's going on with our coast, our vulnerability to flooding and hurricanes in the southern part of the state. And we're not going to let them. We're not going to stand there and let them just take our money and try and give it to these other states. It's awful policy. It's unfair. And we're gonna really help to put some sunshine on the policy problems with what they're trying to do.
We'll stay on them. We'll pick up with you next week. Congressman Garrett Graves, thank you for the time, man.
You bet. Thanks, Brian. Take care.
Thanks. Your Money Now coming your way. .756 to Talk 107.3 FM, WBRP. Brian Haldane here with you. Got one more segment to go and a couple of different news stories to touch on before we get out of here, not the least of which is Governor John Bel Edwards signing off on the state's $30 billion budget. The governor was touting the pay raises for teachers. Early childhood education was another of his wins of the last legislative session. We talked with Stephanie Hilferty. State Rep. Stephanie Hilferty, who I think we're going to talk to quite frequently around here. Dude, she was a house of fire. That was good stuff. Anyway, Governor John Bel Edwards signs the $30 billion budget that lawmakers approved in the recently completed legislative session. Edwards says the spending plan that goes into effect July 1st contains the first teacher pay raise in a decade.
It's not just teachers. It's all certificated personnel and all support workers are in this particular instrument, because we know it's everybody on campus that contributes to the education of our children.
Now, teachers will receive a $1,000 pay raise. School support workers get a $500 boost in pay. The budget also contains an additional $39 million in block grant funding for public schools, and the budget increases funding so that additional children can attend pre-K education classes.
And what that means at the end of the day, there's about 1,458 children who are going to be removed from the waiting list, and they're going to get a slot.
Now, that pre-K education was part of what we were talking about with Stephanie Hilferty. Pre-K, actually, early childhood development, it predates pre-K. Like, you're talking earlier than that daycare age, like 1, 2, and 3 years old. But this dovetails with another story that was out, and we'll get back to another soundbite from the governor in just a second. But Louisiana continues to be ranked 49th in overall child well-being. Kids Count manager at Agenda for Children, Teresa Falgu, says a big factor into the low ranking in the state is that the state ranks 50th in childhood poverty, with 307,000 children living in poverty. That's roughly 28% of the state's child population. So when you see the money going into early childhood education and it's going to help the 28% that's right there, it's going to help more than that. But this raising that ranking will help raise this ranking. Falgu says when kids are living in poverty, they're less likely to have access to good schools, good health care, and their parents are much more likely to have trouble meeting their basic needs. Well, this would help with that. Now, if you want to get into the discussion of whether or not that's the government's job, I think we've seen that discussion time and time again, and we've seen the same result by doing the same thing. My argument is if you throw a couple dollars at early childhood education, maybe you'll be throwing fewer dollars at welfare later on in life. If you bring kids up to speed before they get to school, maybe they won't need you when you get them out of school. Just a thought. Back to the governor, though. Edwards says if reelected, he will push Louisiana teacher salaries up to the Southern regional average.
We didn't quite get there, but this is a big down payment in that process, and we're going to make sure that that happens.
Like we said, the governor is running for reelection. A raise for teachers is going to be a big feather in his cap as he moves through the election process. He moves through the campaigning process, no doubt. All right, we got we're basically done here. CBS News coming your way in just a little bit. Don't forget, Crime Stoppers is tomorrow, and Foodie Friday, presented by the Louisiana Beef Industry Council, will be coming your way Friday. Right now, here's CBS.